It's Tuesday at 5 o'clock, and you're listening to Asheville FM, which means it's time for Real Talk, where Kim and Mark bring you what's new in theaters, what's new on DVD, and for you, just because you're listening, just specially for you today, it's our best of 2014. And as you know from listening to Real Talk regularly, that means it will be the best that we've seen in 2014, which might include DVD releases. So, Real Talk is brought to you by the Fine Arts Theater, located at 36 Biltmore Avenue in Asheville. The Fine Arts Theater specializes in art and independent films, as well as special events. Call their movie line for the schedule at 828-232-1536 or visit their website at www.fineartstheater.com. First, we're going to start with what's new in theaters. Foxcatcher opens this week. It has been highly anticipated, probably because it was supposed to open last summer. This is the new Bennett Miller film. You might know his work from directing Moneybag and Capote and The Cruise, which was a really fun documentary about this guy who does this street tour on a bus in New York.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was super rad.
Mm-hmm, that's great.
But this is a psychological drama, and it stars Steve Carell with a whole bunch of crazy makeup work done on his face, yeah. Alongside Channing Tatum and Mark Ruffalo, as well as Vanessa Redgrave and Sienna Miller. And it's based on the true story of an Olympic gold medal winning wrestler, Mark Schultz, who is trying to win out of the shadow of his celebrated wrestling brother. And they come across this millionaire who wants to help them train for the 1988 Seoul Olympics, but somebody's not going to make it out alive. And this one's just getting all kinds of buzz.
Yeah, this is based on one of those unbelievably true stories. I guess it's about maybe 30 years old now. Whatnot. Mm-hmm. But they're saying this is definitely going to be a front runner for some Academy Award nominations. And you can't recognize some of these actors, especially Carell.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely heavily made up, or I don't know if it was made up. Maybe it's like a nose or...
Yeah.
Whatever, but yeah, he looks almost unrecognizable as John DuPont, the millionaire John DuPont. So yeah, this looks great. This looks great.
All right, so if you've been waiting and waiting and waiting to see it, it is finally opening here in Asheville.
There's a lot of people wanting to see this film, yeah. Yeah, and people do like the films where comedians, I think, are able to stretch their acting chops quite a bit. You know, I think some of the most popular Will Ferrell films we've ever had have been the ones where it's more of a drama or a little
Absolutely.
More different. Yeah, exactly. Of course, you know, same thing with Jim Carrey or people like that. Our audiences especially want to see them do something else.
Also opening up this weekend, Black Hat. It is an action thriller, and it is directed by Michael Mann, who is a celebrated director who did Last Mohicans and Heat and Collateral. This one stars Chris Hemsworth, Tang Wei, Viola Davis, and more. And in this one, there are American and Chinese agencies working together to capture the cyber criminal who doesn't seem, and this is becoming a hot topic of discussion because it came up in even Bill Maher's show recently. What if people just want to see chaos? They don't necessarily want to make money. They're not hacking for fame or for finance, but just to bring down.
Or for borders, you know, they're not hired by a country or anything like that. So
right.
Yeah.
So this is the tale of trying to catch one such hacker. And yeah, it's rated R. It opens up this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Michael Mann is the man who, for better or worse, created Miami Vice, which, you know, I'll defend that show. At least the first season or two were fantastic until the celebrity albums came out and things like that, fashion statements and whatnot. He also... really good writer director. He did Thief, a wonderful Nazi horror film called The Keep, which we're hoping to see officially the light of day out there. We have it, but he also did Collateral, Last of the Mohicans, and whatnot. Known mainly for style, maybe more than substance, but I think the substance has come around over the past few films. The Insider was also Michael Mann, that great film with Russell Crowe, is about the cigarette executive that mm-hmm. wanted to break out and spill the beans, more or less. So yeah, man doesn't do too many films, and this should be interesting.
All right. Black Hat opens this weekend here in Asheville, and so does Paddington Bear. I didn't know people cared about Paddington Bear, but maybe this will help to reinvigorate the
story. I mean, you know, you're in the wrong country. I mean, Paddington Bear, I'm sure, is huge in Britain.
UK.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought this was going to come out for the holidays, but my guess is that perhaps in the U.S. audiences, they have no idea who Paddington Bear is. So they pushed it back to January?
He's that little stuffed bear, or he looks like a stuffed bear. He's this little bear in a blue coat with a red hat, and he has this little tag that says, you know, keep an eye out for him, take care of this bear, or something like that. It's supposed to be, you know, a new friend, but he's just lonely and on the lam, which, I mean, it's essentially like he's a homeless stuffed bear, and he's looking for a home.
Sure.
Of course, a lot of people want to jump in the next hot movie, especially when it's done by the producers of Harry Potter. So I'm sure they're looking for this to be a huge franchise. So you've got Hugh Bonneville and Sally Hawkins are in the voices and acting in this, as well as Nicole Kidman. So we'll see. Maybe it'll be a big worldwide success. And maybe kids will be super stoked about Paddington again.
Right. Yeah. I don't think Paddington ever really caught on here. I mean, perhaps a little bit, but not.
I was familiar with the books. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think it really caught on.
Right.
This one is directed by Paul King, who directed Bunny and the Bull. And last but not least, there's a little comedy for you this weekend. The Wedding Ringer opens up. This one's directed by Jeremy Gerlich and stars Kevin Hart. Jeremy Gerlich was the screenwriter for The Breakup. And everyone who is a big Kevin Hart fan might enjoy this. It is the concept of, what if you don't really have a whole lot of friends, but you're getting married and you need a best man, and what if you could hire that person out? Well, that person would be Kevin Hart. So, The Wedding Ringer. I think Wedding Crashers was funny. I think anytime you have to go to a wedding, there's going to be some comedy anyway. So maybe a wedding comedy is what you're looking for.
Maybe, and this looks like one of the first times where perhaps Kevin Hart is being more universal, I suppose. Like, I guess the last few films he's done has been more aimed towards the African-American audience, which, you know, was great. You know, like the last few films I thought were pretty funny. But, you know, definitely geared towards, you know, his ethnic group. But it's like cast full of white people. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're going for the broad comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So we shall see.
This could be Hart swinging for the fences here. We'll see. We'll see if he has definitely got the appeal for everybody. You know, like an Eddie Murphy style appeal or whatnot. And I've mentioned, you know, every time we talk about Kevin Hart, he's actually the most popular stand up comedian in the country right now. He sells out auditoriums and stadiums and stuff like that. So,
all right. Well, we shall see. The Fine Arts Theater is showing The Imitation Game and Wild up until this weekend when Foxcatcher starts. And so if you are looking forward to seeing The Imitation Game or Wild, you might want to make a move. They will be out of the theater soon. Okay, stay tuned. In a little bit, we're going to bring you our best of. But before that, we have DVD releases in this next segment coming up next.
The Federal Fair Housing Act, enforced by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, prohibits discrimination in the sale, rental, and financing of housing based on race, color, national origin, religion, sex, familial status, and disability. If you or someone you know feels their rights to fair housing choice have been violated, you may be entitled to compensation. The Asheville-Buncombe Community Relations Council can provide the support needed to address discrimination issues in your community. To file a complaint or learn more about how you can help in the efforts to end unlawful housing discrimination, call 828-252-4713 or visit their website, abcrc.org. Your voice can help support a diverse and inclusive community that is safe and enjoyable for all.
I love my DVD with Mark McCloud from Orbit DVD. A lot of people told me the first DVD release for this week is actually one of their favorites of the year.
Yeah, this is another week. I think last week we were saying we had the best of and the worst of. I think this is another week, a good example of that, the best of and worst of the year. Together, I guess that is the movies, right? You know, you got to take the good and the bad.
Yep.
This fortunately,
your favorite one that you were wanting to see is already rented out.
Exactly. Yes, and then you have to go to the bad, right?
Right.
We won't tell you which one's bad until we make our money back on
right?
it, and then we'll tell you. No, this is definitely on a lot of people. I think along with Boyhood, probably neck and neck with that film. And this is David Fincher's Gone Girl. Gone Girl was based on a novel, and sort of has a. Have you seen it?
I have not seen.
Okay,
it.
Okay, yeah, sort of has maybe, you know, a different take on the psycho lover thing. Maybe it's not the psycho lover. Anyway, there you go. It's a thriller. Drama thriller. Stars Ben Affleck, Rosamund Pike, Neil Patrick Harris actually does a great job in this too. This is great. David Fincher is probably one of our best filmmakers out there, and you know he picks his projects very carefully, and he I think has really been top notch. He started off doing videos. I think maybe his first film, unfortunately, was Alien 3, but then he also did Seven, Zodiac. Social Network, the remake of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which we liked a lot.
Fight Club.
Mm-hmm. Fight Club, of course, is considered one of the best films of the 90s and whatnot. So, like I said, he has been really, really top notch. And this film is definitely up there in his canon and will continue to cement his legacy as probably one of the best working filmmakers today, actually. Some people think he's overhyped, but maybe not. But anyway, great, great performances from everybody all around. There's definitely going to be some Oscar nominations with this one. I'm sure Best Picture will be up there. Best, you know, some Best Acting awards and whatnot. Like I said, Neil Patrick Harris and actually Tyler Perry, both sort of shocking castings in this, and they both did a great job.
Cool. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to checking it out. For those of you looking to wrap up Boardwalk Empire, it is maybe overdue time to do that, but season 5 is out on DVD, so now is your chance.
Boardwalk Empire, yes, HBO show created by, I think, one of the Sopranos guys, along with Martin Scorsese and Mark Wahlberg, actually. Great sort of period piece, Atlantic City during Prohibition, based on a lot of real people. Steve Buscemi, really... You know, he's done leading roles in the past, more independent type films and whatnot, but he is the force. He is the guy in this whole series. He is based on a real Atlantic City politician. His character is called Nucky Thompson and whatnot. But anyway, Al Capone's in this, Lucky Luciano's in this, as well as other people that are, you know, pivotal in the Prohibition years and whatnot. This show had gotten maybe a little bit too long on the tooth, I think, as far as it goes. It's a very expensive show for HBO, of course. It's a time period show, period piece. So
I was really hoping for it to highlight the fact that Prohibition causes more problems than it doesn't, and I was hoping it would highlight the fact that other things maybe in our country.
Yeah. I think it was showing that people were making a living, I guess, somehow with this. But you know, there's a lot of, you know, this is just two generations ago, maybe three generations ago now. You know, and the women's rights. It deals a lot with homosexuality. Of course, the classism is huge. Racism and classism. Classism mm-hmm. still is a prevalent thing today. It's buried under, I think, racism. But you know, you could be white, but they knew where you came from, you know, and that definitely played into how people perceived you and whatnot. They were wise to the show started with the introduction of Prohibition, so I think that was like maybe the teens, late teens. I can't remember exactly when that started.
Right.
It was repealed when FDR got into office, so it's like 32 or so, I believe. And this show wisely jumps forward 10 years. So they're now, the last season is actually on the last year of Prohibition. So they did it right.
That way it's not a 15-year long show.
No. Well, I mean, it is technically. I mean, it's like, you know, it started in, you know, back then, and then, you know, leaps forward about 10 years after the season 4. So yeah, it's good they're finishing it. It's 5 seasons. I think that's long enough for this one. And you know, once again, great acting, great costumes, and
yeah, I think Kelly McDonald did a great job in this one. From what I saw.
Oh yeah,
Michael Shannon's in this.
Michael Shannon, of course, is horrific in this thing as well. So Good parts for everybody.
All right, time to wrap it up. Boardwalk season 5 and final. I haven't seen it, but Walk Among the Tombstones is out this week, and I've heard some good things about this one.
Yeah, I really like this. A couple weeks ago, we had Denzel Washington kicking ass as the Equalizer. He was more of an ass kicker than this character. This is based on a novel. It's sort of like an old school PI movie. We love those. You know, the woman walks into the PI office, and you know, a lot of film noirs I think are started off that way and whatnot.
I need your
help.
You know,
like some Bogarts and stuff like that. There's no woman in distress. Well, there are women in distress, but it's a very interesting sort of modern take on the private investigator film. And this stars Liam Neeson, who is normally known for kicking ass here lately. I think we talked about his Taken film that came out last weekend, or actually this weekend. And this character is a little more broken. He's definitely, and you'll see in the first few minutes the sort of the backstory behind him. He reluctantly takes a gig from a major drug dealer whose wife was first kidnapped and then ransomed, then murdered. Once the ransom was delivered, and he is trying to find the people involved who, oddly enough, are worse than the drug dealers out there.
Oh, no.
This, like I said, I really like this. This is written by and directed by Scott Frank. This might be his directorial debut. He's well known for writing some really good stories. Out of Sight was him. Minority Report, The Lookout. Maybe he directed The Lookout too. I can't remember, but he's done some really nice screenplays over the past, say, 20 years or so. Get Shorty was another one. Really smart scripts.
Yeah.
And whatnot. So, really gritty, kind of gray, cold New York, you know, and I was in the mood for it really. And I really enjoyed it. But once again, if you're looking for some kicking ass, not so much kicking ass. There are guns, of course, and some,
just twists and
some
and
action
turns.
Stuff. Yeah. And just more of a procedural type of film. You know, he's getting to the bottom of things out there.
All right. I did just see Inherent Vice. So it sounds like maybe this is a more serious version of the getting to the bottom of things.
right.
Love is Strange is out on DVD this week.
Yeah, this one I kind of maybe predict will probably get some Oscar nominations here and there, mainly just for the unique circumstances behind this film.
Yeah, I think that I've heard that too.
Mm-hmm, right, and this is a film, sort of a comedy about a couple who just got married. The couple is actually a elderly gay couple. It's John Lithgow and Alfred Molina.
We talked about this one getting R rating for maybe the most ridiculous reason.
Right, yeah. I think there is one F-bomb dropped in this. But other than that, there's plenty of F-bombs in PG-13 films out there now. So there's a humongous outcry from people that this got an R rating. There's no sex scenes. There's no violence. Like I said, there's very just sporadic cussing in it. No more than the usual PG-13 movie. And it got rated R by the ratings board called the MPAA, who were, you know, lifelong enemies with. We don't like the MPAA. So this is a good case for the fact that perhaps MPAA needs to be overhauled again and looked at again. And this is a good film. It's a good film. And it's dare I say, sweet.
And it's also supposed to be a story that anyone could relate to.
Right.
What if you're in a big city like New York, and one of you loses your job, and that means you can't afford your apartment, so both of you have to stay in different apartments while you find something else, meaning work and or somewhere to live. I think there are a lot of people in Asheville who can relate to the trying to find somewhere to live.
Yeah. I mean, in this, you know, it's a very simple story. They're displaced because they got married and caught, I guess. One of them is a teacher. And then, so they had to start looking for another place to live. Very hard to do in some major metropolitan areas and whatnot. But you change one of the male roles into a female role, it'd probably been a PG, you know. That's really where a lot of the outcry is. And I think because of that, and the fact that these two actors are great, we love John Lithgow, we love Alfred Molina. And I think Lithgow has won one. Molina's been maybe nominated a couple times. Marisa Tomei has won as well. She's in this film as well. So a really good cast. Ira Sachs has done some very interesting films throughout the years. 40 Shades of Blue, we liked a lot. Keep the Lights On is another one. And good film. It's just a good, simple, sweet film. I'd hate to say sweet, but it is sweet. in a way.
All right. Love is Strange is out on DVD this week. And so is Men, Women, and Children, which I kept like looking at the cover and being like, that looks like an indie film with cool art. Maybe I'll pick that one up. And it's from the director of Juno and Up in the Air, Jason Reitman. So I was like, maybe I'll pick it up. And I never did. Just didn't do it. And evidently everyone hated it.
Right. This hasn't been Reitman's year. He came out with two movies this year that are on quite a few worst of lists. Labor Day. And then this one, Men, Women, Children. Before that, he was kind of a golden kid. He was Ivan Reitman's son. Ivan Reitman's the comedian powerhouse guy. Mm-hmm. He did Ghostbusters and all sorts of other great comedy hits and whatnot. And his son started off doing, he did Thank You for Smoking, which was great, and then hit mm-hmm. it real big with Juno, and then Up in the Air got nominations, and then Young Adult, which is one of our favorite dark comedies out there in the past, say 5 years or so. And then something happened. I don't know if the work dried up for him, or he's just taking a job for money. I'm not quite sure. Oh, he wrote this one, so you kind of blame this. Maybe the poison is the casting as well. Adam Sandler is I think the main casted character in this film well.
Yeah, yeah, that would be enough to make me maybe.
Right, right. So the film was about basically growing up and having to deal with relationships in the internet age, and I think maybe that's what turned a lot of people off to it. I don't know.
Jennifer Garner is usually good. Mm-hmm. People will recognize Dean Norris from Breaking Bad and Under the Dome. I don't know. Maybe if I'm looking for something else, I'll pick it up at some point. House of Lies, season 3. Don Cheadle?
Yeah, Cheadle. This is the other House of TV show, and I think it got eclipsed by the other House of show, which, of course, is House of Cards, the excellent Netflix TV show that I think is also on
its
third season.
Which is a rip-off of a BBC show, I think.
I think so. Well, okay, let's say you just remake, right?
Right.
You know, you can't do that. But it's Don Cheadle and Kristen Bell, two actors we love.
Yeah.
We love both those people. Yeah. So this is a really good show. And I think it is finding its audience as time goes on. It's on Showtime, and it deals with just the cutthroat world of, I think it's a management consultant firm, basically. So basically, you know, you're getting secrets, you're getting, you know, once again, lies, you're doing self-inflation, and just perhaps the main character, Don Cheadle, I think is reached a crisis in his life about what in the heck am I doing, you know? So I think that is really where this show's coming from. This season starts off with a fracture of the crew, the gang, whatever. Some left to do other work for another company and whatnot. So that's basically where a lot of this action comes from in the third season. But yeah, if you haven't seen this yet, it's good.
And it's working on its fourth season now.
Mm-hmm, right.
It might not help that it's on Sundays at 10 o'clock because Sunday nights on TV.
There's a lot going on Sunday night. Yeah, there is. There is.
And last but not least, out on DVD this week, we've got Honeymoon.
Yeah, let's end this with, of course, we all know the story of the Wells Fargo or Loomis Fargo film being filmed this past summer with a humongous cast, Zach Galifianakis and Owen Wilson and this, that, and the other. Anyway, there's other films being filmed here around the same time, and this is a really good horror movie that was filmed in the Hendersonville area, I think maybe one or 2 years ago, and it made its debut in some film festivals last year, and so we're finally starting to see it. And this also stars a Game of Thrones I guess now ex-actor, Rose Leslie, who is one of the, what's those people?
Wildlings?
The Wildlings. She was a wildling, yeah. Really sort of Irish-looking, wild-eyed.
Yeah.
Wildling, yeah. Great role for her. Anyway, this is called Honeymoon, and it's about a honeymoon. Basically, a young couple go to a lake house, and then things are amiss out there. So,
especially if she wakes up, doesn't know where she is or who she is.
Right, right. It's a very, very insular. It's a very tight cast. I think there is one other couple that are briefly in the beginning and towards the end of the film, but the film is basically just the two newlyweds, and they both do a really good job. And this is one of the better horror films I think I've seen in a while. So it's filmed here. So
yeah.
we can be proud of that. Yes. But
excellent.
There's a few other films that were filmed here And we shall see them actually come up next few months.
It's interesting because Honeymoon's getting only 5.7 at 87 minutes on IMDb. But if you go over to Rotten Tomatoes, top critics are given 86%.
I think critics for horror films, like the Babadook film and stuff, I think they like the old school horror, meaning the tension and the slow build up, you know, whereas maybe audiences want the Michael Myers with the knife and the mask coming out. So So I think perhaps if you reach it from that level, whereas, you know, fans want more of a intense visceral experience for a horror film, whereas maybe I think a lot of critics want
the mind games,
more of a slow burn, you know. And that's the films I like, and that's why I like this one. Actually, it's it was good.
All right, well, for our recap for DVD releases, don't leave, stay tuned, because we've got our best of coming up in the next segment. But for DVD releases, we've got Gone Girl, Boardwalk, Fifth and Final Season, Walk Among the Tombstones, Love is Strange, Men, Women, and Children, Season 3 of House of Lies, and locally filmed horror with Honeymoon. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our best of the years.
Listen to T-Bone's Radioactive Kids on Saturday, 8 a.m. with your host, Abby, Alex, and T-Bone. Rolling down the road,
I got a trailer full of pallet drawers. You're listening to Real Talk on AshevilleFM.org, and we've taken a few weeks to really pull together the best of stuff. And I'll tell you that means the past 3 weeks I've really been trying to fit in lots of watching stuff.
It's like, what was I watching back in March? I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember at all.
Going piling through other people's best of lists, releases, DVD release lists, old scripts for this show. Catching up on stuff people told me was their best stuff was an interesting way to try to see if I liked it or not. I don't know if that's the best way to go about it. But shall we go? Are you going to go best of to 1 to 10?
We'll do 10 to 1.
10 to 1.
10
okay.
to 1, yeah. Okay, now, I always preface when I do my top 10 saying some films actually came out in 2013. Because and we didn't get a chance to see it until the DVD came out. So a couple of these films were probably on a best of 2013 list. This first one I'm starting off with definitely would be a lot higher if I had saw it in the theaters in 2013. This is the absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it would have been higher.
Beautiful, wonderful Wolf of Wall Street. Martin Scorsese doing Goodfellas with Wall Street. It is absolutely amazing. It is mind-blowing. I think it's 3 hours of just debauchery and insanity. And
we just
comedy.
Rewatched this one, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like it's definitely got a humongous rewatch factor. But you absolutely hate everybody involved in this film. You cannot stand any of these characters, which makes it even better, I think, when you think about it.
It's absolutely the problem of when you have class differentiation and just huge executives that are just taking everyone's money and using it to party.
Right. Yeah.
There we are. But it's Leonardo DiCaprio in a Martin Scorsese film, so
there you go.
It's award-winning right there. I will say that it's not a family-friendly film. If you feel like that people will be easily offended by drugs and nudity, so it is definitely
it's about as hard R as you can get. Yeah, it's probably the hardest. I think actually Scorsese was said that it's probably his most graphic nude and sex scenes he's ever done in his whole career. If you look back through his films, it's not too much, really. And that makes a lot of sense, actually.
But it's based on a true-ish... Well, it's based on a person, Jordan Belfort.
Right.
And I thought the soundtrack was great. But, of course, Scorsese can afford any songs.
Yeah,
he can
get whatever he wants. Yeah.
It's a long 3-hour film, so that's the other thing.
It is.
But we just rewatched it, and it was... I didn't make it through the whole thing the second time around, but it's definitely got some energy to it. Your number 9 is on my list, too.
Great. Because a lot of people hated this one.
Maybe that's why I like it.
Right. But, you know, we just talked about in the previous segment about horror films where, like, people want the more visceral knives in the face and stuff like that, whereas maybe critics want a slower-paced movie. This definitely is a slower-paced sci-fi horror film. Sort of a really good film that harkens back to like the pre-Star Wars days of science fiction. But once again, people hated it. People thought it was overblown and perhaps overhyped. I think Ken Hanke, thought that way. But I disagree. And this is the Under the Skin film. starring Scarlett Johansson as a alien who takes a young lady's body, puts it on, and then starts to take other young men's bodies
for energy or something.
Something going on there. Yeah, it's a black goo, basically. But it's unsettling. I think a lot of I would love to have been in the theater with a bunch of young bro guys thinking they're going to see
what they're going to see of
Scarlett Johansson's boobies, and you know, instead seeing a horrific sexual predator, pretty much. And I think that's probably where the unsettling for a lot of people came in with this film.
I do think that we talked about this a couple weeks ago, that Scarlett Johansson is wins the award for 2014's Hardest Working Actress.
Absolutely, yeah.
And she's done a whole bunch of different diverse roles, so mad props for her for trying something totally different. This one is based on the novel of the same name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's apparently a lot cut out the novel, but they still did a really good job.
Under the Skin. All right, this next one, it looks like it's your documentary of the year.
I got one, a couple slots up there. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Jodorowsky's Dune. If you don't know the story behind this, the first person that was set to adapt the pretty much unfilmable book Dune was Alejandro Jodorowsky, who we'll be talking about closer to the top of the list here. Anyway, Jodorowsky in the mid-70s came very close to making Dune, and he failed, basically. So this whole movie is about the failure. The best thing about the failure is a lot of the creative team, besides Jodorowsky, went on to make the film Alien, which is considered one of the greatest hot sci-fi horror films ever made, pretty much. So this also introduced a lot of young people to Alejandro Jodorowsky. Jodorowsky's in his mid-80s. He did El Topo, Holy Mountain, some of the craziest cult films of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a force of nature, and he is taking up the entire screen, basically, in a great way. He is egotistical. He is full of himself, but he's also got his ego in check. And he's also just enigmatic and just, like I said, just a force of nature. And he will command you from the beginning to the end of this movie.
I will say that when I watched this, I was like, I want to see Jodorowsky's Dune.
Right. And it's frustrating for a lot of sci-fi fans because he, I don't think he even read the book when he started adapting the thing. He just wanted to do it. And I think what it could have been would have been awesome, for sure.
H.R. Giger just passed away mm-hmm. recently.
And there's a documentary
year.
Of him coming out pretty soon, too. But
very cool. Really
yeah, but he, yeah, he had Giger. He had Dan O'Bannon, who wrote the screenplay. He also wrote the screenplay for Alien. Mobius, the awesome French comic book artist Mobius, was involved with this. Pink Floyd was attached to do the soundtrack. Salvador Dali was attached to this. I think Orson Welles was attached to this.
It was going
to
be the best sci-fi film of all time.
It was going to be amazing. Amazing, yeah.
And it did get passed on, but, you know, David Lynch did the best of David Lynch version of Dune, but we'll... You know, I think it brings that up in the documentary too.
Right.
It's really fun to watch all of this dreamy artwork and music and just imagine wanting to see it, Jodorowsky's Dune. So yeah, I agree that this is a really good
mm-hmm.
release. Cold in July?
Cold in July, it's a thriller, yeah. This is Jim Mickle. Jim Mickle has been sort of quietly making some of the better genre films, or actually genre-bending films we've seen out there over the past few years. Stakeland, Mulberry Street, both of those are kind of horror films and whatnot. And now this one, sort of, I guess maybe his now calling card, with a larger cast. And this really, really good film about how sort of one incident can continue to kill and kill and kill and kill, basically. Michael C. Hall, probably his best sort of, maybe his only post-Dexter work I've seen so far from him, is a family man who... ends up on the wrong side of a home invasion. The person is then supposedly killed by him, or at least that's what the police say. But then the man killed was perhaps not the man who invaded the home.
Uh-oh.
And that man who was killed has some very strange and scary relatives and friends as well. Uh-oh. So yeah, this is an excellent thriller.
One lie piled on top of another.
Right. Yeah. This is one of the best thrillers of the year. We absolutely love this movie, man. If you haven't seen it yet, you should.
I'm a big Sam Shepard fan, so mm-hmm. that would yep. be enough.
And Don Johnson is awesome in this too.
At number six, you have Act of Killing.
Yeah, Act of Killing. This is a film produced by Werner Herzog and Errol Morris. They weren't directed by him. But it's Joshua Oppenheimer and actually a guy who's now afraid for his life. He had to go back in hiding. Mm. Basically, it is dealing with mass murders of the Khmer Rouge. And they interview the people that did the killing, which is unusual. They usually interview survivors.
Right.
And things like that. But they go the flip side, interview the people that actually did the killing. And they reenact it in very bizarre ways.
Yeah, it's kind of set up where the killers choose which genre the filmmaker is going to
present, like a musical or a gangster movie or something like that. And that's how they recreate the killings, basically. It's a film that you've got to see it, but I could say you can only see it once. You can only see it once. You cannot watch this more than once. There is a companion film that is coming out that does talk to survivors and things like that. That's coming out real soon as well. So,
but it's interesting, like you said, to approach it from the mind of the killer instead of
right. It's unusual.
Persecuted.
Right. It's unusual to even talk to people about that. You know, and so these people were very proud of what they did. You know, just even more depraved and disturbing.
Your number five is towards the top of my list as well. Snowpiercer.
This is another one where people, you're gonna love it or hate it.
Yeah.
And if you hate it, boy, you hate it. You hate it so bad.
I think I was really thankful that I knew it was based on a graphic novel.
Right. And it's also going into it knowing that it's also done by a Korean director, mm-hmm. Jun Ho Bong, who has done some of the best Korean films of the past few years. The Host, Memories of Murder, Mother, which is fantastic. He did a segment for Tokyo. It's a really good sort of anthology film. Korean films are over the top, and you'll know in the first 5 minutes of this movie where you stand, basically. As soon as Tilda Swinton's character comes on screen, if you can't handle her, you might as well just go ahead and turn it off. I'm serious.
She's going to be all in it.
Well, it's not just her. It's that she just sets the whole tone for the film. It's a very obvious class system. Movie. It's apocalyptic. There's a self-propelled train going around the planet, breaking through huge blocks of ice and snow and things like that. The world's wealthy are in the front of the train, and going back to the end of the train, where of course the not so wealthy are, pretty much. So it definitely has a message about it. It's extremely violent to the part of being cartoonish, I think. And
it's also very claustrophobic.
Yes.
I think that's the other complaint that I had from it. But I think, once again, if you understand what the subject matter is that you're working with, then mm-hmm. it makes it more fun to watch.
Right. This film has got sort of some notoriety this summer or last year because it was acquired as a Korean film, a foreign production or a national production. It was already a huge hit. It's already made like $100 million before it was to come out in the United States. And the Weinstein brothers acquired the rights to this, and they wanted the filmmaker to cut it which they often do with foreign movies, to cut it down like an hour and a half or so, and he refused. So kudos to him. Because of that, the Weinstein brothers just basically dumped it in the theater. They didn't promote it. And it still made some money here. So, thank you, Weinstein Brothers, for making people want to see it on home video. I appreciate that.
This is starring Chris Evans, which
is Captain America. There
are pros and cons on that one. Mm-hmm. Of course, we talked about Tilda Swinton. It also stars Ed Harris, John Hurt, Kang Ho Song, Jamie Bell, Octavia Spencer. There's a whole bunch of faces you'll recognize mm-hmm. in this one.
Yeah, a couple of people from The Host are in this as well, so.
Yeah. Very cool. Snowpiercer, very fun to watch. Your number four is on my list as well, but it's because you made me watch it.
That's the beauty of this, right?
Right.
Yeah, this film came out of nowhere, basically. Literally nowhere. And there's a gimmick. Like Boyhood, the gimmick was, it was filmed over 12 years. This is a revenge film. However, the gimmick of this revenge film is that the revenge happens in the first, say, 10, 20 minutes of the movie. Usually revenge films build over an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then it takes place at the very end, the very climax of the film. This is actually the climax begins and then builds again. And we're, of course, talking about Blue Ruin. Blue Ruin. The filmmaker's only made like maybe one or two movies. He did a really interesting one called Murder Party a few years ago. It mostly worked, mostly did not. So this is kind of where the shock is for us. Is just like I said, this came out of left field, and it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Very small budget.
Oh yeah, no budget. Yeah, I think that perhaps one beef some people had is the main lead. They just liked him less and less as the film went on, because you know it, basically what happens is you know he taking the revenge on a man that killed his parents, and then like the Cold in July film, the person he killed, the family don't back down. So he killed a hillbilly, and they of course are going to be looking for revenge. His family's gone except for his sister, which of course there's some issues there. Now she's a target and things, and her children and things like that. So,
well, I thought Blue Ruin was super awesome, mm-hmm. and definitely really tense. But if you're looking for even more intense and awesome in the way that you would expect Martin McLeod to say, you're probably looking for Dead Snow too. you know.
Right.
There's a reason you listen
to people like look at me like going, Dead Snow 2, what? You love Dead Snow 1. Dead Snow 1 came out a few years ago. It was I think it's Norwegian zombie Nazi film. There's actually quite a few mm-hmm. zombie Nazi films out there. Not dozens, but maybe half a dozen or so. However, this one is a sequel. It takes place immediately after the first one, and it's in English. The other one was in Norwegian, and it blows the lid right off. It is amazing. It's funnier than hell. The rule book's thrown out. Movie taboos. You think of movie taboos that are out there, things that you cannot show on a film, or else people get really upset. They are in this movie. Basically, they are in this movie, so I won't go into detail about that. But everything you that's wrong is in Dead Snow 2, and that's why I love it so much. We're actually going to be showing it for free at the Mothlight on the 20th at 9 p.m. So come out and see it, and definitely check your brain in the door because you don't need it, or else they'll get your brain in Dead Snow 2.
Excellent. Well, we have another Jodorowsky to talk about.
Yeah. In addition to Jodorowsky's Doom, Alejandro Jodorowsky actually made his first film in almost 25 years. And glad to say it was excellent. This is a Dance of Reality. Dance of Reality is basically it's his childhood in, I believe, Chile, if I remember correctly. He was a maybe second-generation Jewish immigrant into Chile. So this film is basically, he's in it himself, sort of guiding his younger self, his 12-year-old self. He's got a foot in the past. He's also got a foot in his grave in this film as well. Like I said earlier, he's in his mid-80s, so he could be the oldest living filmmaker today right now, actually, if you think about it. This could be a new beginning for him, actually, as well. So I think
it's really very plotted out, especially lots of reds and lots of bright mm-hmm. contrast in color with very bleak and gray colors, which you expect out of any Jodorowsky film.
Right. And Jodorowsky, his filmatic influences are on his sleeve, so you'll see a lot of Buñuel and Fellini and whatnot. A lot of those elements are in this movie. It's colorful, like a Jodorowsky film. It's shocking. Beautiful, and disturbing. All these elements are going to be in one of his movies. And I absolutely loved it. It turned out much better than I thought it could possibly be. And, you know, he's had a film in him for 25 years, and he made it. And he actually's got, you know, watching some interview footage, he's got more films that he wants to make as well. Yeah, so let's do it. 90-year-old filmmaker. Yeah. I mean, Godard's still making films, though, too. So
this is true.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised about this first one. Why don't you introduce this one, though?
Did you see it?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
All right.
I'll catch up.
Well, I was start off saying, and this I think was an entry to the Cannes Film Festival. There's lots of entries to the Cannes Film Festival, but I think actually this was a finalist in the Cannes Film Festival. Sort of a story that has been done, I don't say to death. This also deals with, man, it's all dealing with classism for me today, I guess. a sort of disheveled homeless guy and his sort of lackeys end up infiltrating a upper middle class home. It's a Dutch film. We're talking about the film called Borgman. That film has been done before. I mean, it's definitely, you know, let's say Hesher is a good example of that. You know, like just somebody just appears at your doorstep and just, you know, or down and out in Beverly Hills, just ends up in your house pretty much. About halfway through, this film completely goes off the deep end, falls off the rails, of however you call it, and it gets incredibly awesome. It already was awesome to begin with, and it just gets even more awesome as time goes on. The filmmaker did this great film about 10 years ago also called Grimm. He's definitely done quite a few films throughout the years here, but Grimm, I think, is the last one we have by him. And I cannot recommend this film more highly enough. Kim, you should be watching.
I know. I'm trying to catch up with all the other nonsense that failed. I didn't catch Borgman, but I'll catch it.
Okay.
The only ones that didn't cross over on our list for best in film might have been ones that do have reasons for not checking out yet, because I think some of them you would really like. One is, and we'll just say Grand Budapest Hotel. I know it's not totally up your alley. And Wes Anderson, a lot of people feel is overhyped, but this is the kind of Wes Anderson I like. And I like Grand Budapest Hotel.
What's the difference between this one and the last one?
Do
we have another hour?
He just took old characters and reinserted them into a film. It drove me completely nuts. Grand Budapest Hotel is more of a caper.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I liked it.
Gotcha.
20,000 Days on Earth, I literally watched 2 days ago, and it only played for one night at the Fine Arts Theater. It is the documentary about Nick Cave. 20,000 Days on Earth, I fall for music documentaries like crazy, but I'll watch it again and again. It's really great. The soundtrack is great. I don't even know if I'm a big fan of Nick Cave's music, but the story was outstanding, like really super looking at yourself.
I say a top 15 of music one for me is Super Duper Alice Cooper. If you haven't seen that yet, I truly recommend that one as well. So I like this one a lot too. I did, but you know, I'm not the hugest Cave fan, but I'll watch any documentary on any musician.
Oh yeah,
period.
Me too.
Yeah.
And then my favorite film of this year was actually Birdman, and I think it will be one of those ones that divides people, where they'll feel like it's overhyped and they're sick of hearing about it and they're sick of it being in the theater. But Birdman for me was the best one. I feel like you easily could watch it 2 or 3 times and still not know if is it really all one shot. Certainly there's elements of it that can make it really feel like you're going to get annoyed, the same way Tree of Life did for me.
Mm-hmm. And he's moving on from like the really intense drama to the filmmaker is Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu, who has done was it 21 Grams, Amores Perros, really, really serious, heavy, heavy movies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really just a dark comedy, really. And I like this direction, and he needs to keep going.
Yeah.
He needs to keep going for it.
Michael Keaton is fantastic, playing a actor who's having a hard time getting acting work because everyone thinks of him as having played a superhero, which Michael Keaton has. And Ed Norton is fantastic. Zach Galifianakis, awesome. Everyone in this film is just super.
Mm-hmm.
So Birdman is my number one, but we should take a couple minutes to talk about, well, I haven't seen Babadook, and I haven't seen Wild, and I haven't seen Imitation Game, and I haven't seen Ida, which are on a lot of people's best of lists. Those are my favorite from the year. TV on DVD.
Yeah, real
some
quick.
Good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
True Detective and Fargo, we've talked about.
We talk about that all the time, and those are truly the top. I mean, if you haven't seen either one of those, there's not much commitment you have to make. I think Fargo's 10 episodes, True Detective's 7 episodes, so it's a very short season for this stuff. If you haven't seen those two, you got to do it. I mean, while you're hibernating this winter, see those two shows.
Orange is the New Black was fun. It's finally getting back from the doldrums of season 2, as well as Girls season 3, which was like, okay, finally, we're getting back to where I'm watching this first place. But Broad City was better.
Yeah, Broad City.
Everyone told me that was the best thing. Yeah. I have an Amazon Prime subscription because I get cheaper shipping that way, because I, you know, don't own a car, so it's kind of tricky sometimes. Well, one aspect of that is that you also get to watch some TV, and Broad City was one of those things. But
for those who don't know what we're talking about, Broad City's on Comedy Central. I think it started from like a webisode or something like that. Yeah, and it's two comedians, meaning female comedians, they are also doing the New York thing, mm-hmm. basically.
What it's like to be 20-something in New York.
Right. But I think where they get it and where Girls doesn't is maybe just not taking themselves seriously.
And super raw.
The whole thing is ridiculous. And I think Girls actually does approach it from just a ridiculousness as well.
But it's a little so polished.
It's a little bit too polished. Broad City is just... It's almost like a stream of consciousness film, it's a show as well. So I mean, they're just literally hopping from one thing to another, and it's kind of surreal in a way. The whole thing it's a little strange at times, but I don't think I've laughed as loud for on a TV show.
I've rewatched episodes.
I know, yeah. As I have watching Broad City, so that's probably, you know, at least comedy TV, definitely number one for me.
And, of course, I like to get lost in the fakeness of a good fiction like Leftovers or Peaky Blinders, but there's plenty of weirdness happening in our news, and so that's why I liked Last Week Tonight for a twist on the news that makes it, you know, if you can't, you know, beat them, join them, just laugh.
Mm-hmm. And that's John Oliver, who was on The Daily Show, and I think he took all the great writers with him from The Daily Show, or he has assembled an awesome team. Whoever is behind him, as far as researchers or writers and things like that, they're doing an absolutely fantastic job.
And I didn't finish up with Hannibal yet, but you said that one's up there on your list.
Oh yeah, Hannibal I think has kept the consistency through season 2 and season 3. Season 2 we saw on DVD in 2014. We're going to see season 3 real soon on DVD. And it's just excellent. I mean, from the acting to just the tension to the sets, To the colors, everything about the show, yeah. To the cooking, it makes you makes you hanker for a ham hock of human, I guess, out there. But the whole thing is just so well done, and I think they are finishing it up with season 4. So it's going to be a nice tight short run for this show, because I think they are just they're basically just kind of following Red Dragon as far as the book.
I also, everyone and their mother says to watch High Maintenance, but I don't have access to it, so we'll have to look forward to that.
And there's another one everybody keeps talking about too, which we're going to have to buy from Britain and convert over. Black Mirror is one that people have.
Oh, you know, yeah, I've heard about that one too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, so many best of lists. Thank you so much for another great year of Real Talk. We wanted to let you know that Real Talk is brought to you by the Fine Arts Theater, located at 36 Biltmore Avenue in Asheville. The Fine Arts Theater specializes in art and independent films, as well as special events. Call their movie line for the schedule at 828-232-1536, or visit their website at www.fineartstheater.com. And once again, Dead Snow 2, January 20th at The Mothlight. You can get more information at themothlight.com. Peace.